Back in 1977, Star Wars broke new ground for its stunning visual effects. Imagine the film without its iconic sounds. That last one there had to be a Wookiee, right? Before it, a spaceship, laser blasts. Actually, what you were hearing, the twanging of a radio tower cable, an elephant screaming, and a bear growling. The new book, The Sounds of Star Wars, explains how the Star Wars sound effects were made. It comes with a sort of a sound panel, so you can dial up the sounds as you're reading about them and seeing pictures of technicians at work. Author J.W. Rinzler joins us with more from Skywalker Sound. J.W., welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's just dive in, because this is so much fun. First of all, kids everywhere imitate the sound of a lightsaber. But before Star Wars, we forget it just didn't exist. Let's listen to that sound. So how did sound designer Ben Burtt create that sound?
Well, George Lucas recruited Ben Burtt right out of USC Film School. And in the beginning, before they even began principal photography, Ben was still working there as a graduate student. He wasn't working full-time on Star Wars. So one of his jobs was to man the projector booth. And the projector at the USC Film School made this, the motor made this interesting sound, he thought. It had kind of a musical sound. It had beats to it. He recorded that, and then he mixed it with what was really a mistake. He said normally the kind of thing a sound engineer would throw away. He had a microphone with a broken wire, and it picked up a TV tube in the back, you know, in San Rafael, in the sound studio they had there, and he combined the two sounds, and that became the basic sound for the lightsaber.
Wow, let's listen to it again. Just great. And when you think it was a mistake, just great. Well, and we understand that George Lucas was adamant. He didn't want any electronic synthesizers. He sort of wanted this kind of found sound. Why was that?
Well, George wasn't making a science fiction film. You know, he didn't want people dressed up in silver spacesuits, and he didn't want it to be kitschy. He wanted to be a kind of used universe in a galaxy far, far away, a space fantasy. And so he wanted the sounds to be original and to be organic. It wasn't like they didn't want to use any synthesizers or electronic sounds, but he didn't want it to be just 100% those sounds.
Well, and as Ben Burtt found out when he tried to create the sounds for R2-D2, the synthesizer, I mean, it just doesn't have the emotion that was necessary. And let's just remind ourselves, this is Luke Skywalker's little astro droid. They were trying to create a language for him. Let's listen to the wonderful R2. And R2-D2, really, did he had emotion, which you can't get from the synthesizer. So what did Ben Burtt do?
Well, working with George during post-production, they were having a hard time with R2-D2 because he was going to have to play opposite Alec Guinness, so they really had to get it right. Ben started by doing just purely electronic synthesized sounds, and it just wasn't working because there was no character in it. And as they were talking about it, they realized, George and Ben, that they were making baby sounds to approximate what R2-D2 would say. And they said, well, why don't we try that, really? And so they started with just one scene or one line of dialogue. Ben wrote it out in English, what he thought R2-D2 was saying. George said, yeah, that's close enough. And then Ben sort of curled up into a fetal position and pretended to be a baby and made all sorts of baby sounds that sounded like the English, or at least got the message across. And then he wrapped it up with a synthesizer with sort of electronic cocoon around it. Mm-hmm. And it worked, and they slowly developed a vocabulary for R2-D2.
Well, and a personality, and you get a sense of that. It's sort of the anthropomorphization of R2. With one of the sounds that people will remember from the first Star Wars, it's when Luke Skywalker is taking part on the assault of the Death Star, and R2 gets hit by a laser. You know, it's funny. I can't now. You know, now I can't listen to that sound the same way. Knowing at the time, I'm screaming with him. Oh my gosh! But now that I know the story, where does that scream come from?
Comes from Ben, and I believe it was a scream under duress. I mean, everything they did for Star Wars was under extreme duress, and I think that, you know, the editors were literally up the stairs in what is now George's house. Then was the Lucasfilm headquarters. And they said, quick, we need a scream for R2-D2. And Ben probably because he was stressed, was able to do a really good scream, which he's never been able to duplicate. So every time R2-D2 screams in the movies, it's always that 1977 one.
Well, now I laugh when I think of this grown man, you know, screaming. Well, some of the sounds that are as strong as the visuals include the Death Star explosion at the end of the first film. Let's listen. And then there's a howl from Chewbacca.
Chewbacca, I think, was a combination of bear sounds, a little bit of walrus. And that was one of the first sounds that Ben was sent out to collect.
And here's the sound of the Sando Aqua monster from Episode 1. This is the monster chasing Obi-Wan Kenobi and others through the sea. Okay, who's that?
Well, that is Ben Burtt's baby daughter, who apparently was breathing very heavily one night, and Ben thought, ooh, that's a really interesting sound, and recorded her. When you slow it down and play with it, you get a really scary monster-like sound.
Some of us who look back at the films, the pictures sometimes don't hold up. You kind of think, oh, wow, that looks kind of cheesy compared to, you know, modern-day graphics. But the sound holds up.
Well, George has always said sound is 50% of the picture, and so he lavished a lot of his time on it working with Ben. Ben was just, he really is like a musician creating great musical scores through sounds. Yeah. And I think that's why they have lasted so long and will continue to.
And didn't Ben Burtt go into some sort of deep sea diving place and put on a deep sea diving suit and then record himself breathing for the sounds of Darth Vader?
Yeah, he didn't actually put on the suit. I mean, Star Wars didn't have a big budget for sound. In fact, it was minuscule. He went into a scuba place in San Rafael and just stuck a microphone in an aqua lung and just sort of slipped it over his head and started breathing for, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes. And that was enough for all of the Darth Vader breathing sounds.
And then he manipulated. I mean, that's the other thing. A lot of the sound got manipulated the way his daughter's sound was manipulated to come up with the final product. By the way, do you have a favorite one that we didn't mention that may not be so obvious?
I've always been partial to Aunt Beru's food processor. I always thought that was hilarious. I think it's Ben's grandfather's ham radio set. There's also Jabba's barge exploding, which is Ben and his crew were able to just go berserk in a house that was designated for demolition. So they were like tossing TVs out of third-story windows and recording this, smashing the bits. And you can actually hear that in the sound effect in the book for Jabba's barge exploding.
Fascinating. And I can just hear little kids everywhere saying, wow, throw TVs out of a window. I'm going to be a sound technician.
Right.
That's J.W. Rinzler, author of The Sounds of Star Wars. J.W., thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.